It's deja vu. This moment's happened before.
You have found the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
Hello, and welcome to the Kaleidoscope Gallery. I'm your host, Paul Edwards, and alongside contributors Dave, Autumn, and Leah, we will be exploring the city of tomorrow, the future of cities. We'll hear about Dave's 10,000 floors high future apartments, vertical farming, Google's failed Toronto smart city plan, Epcot, Disney's experimental prototype city of tomorrow, passenger drones, driverless cars and autonomous party buses, a dream of a utopian future city, and more. So join us as we speculate on the future of cities. Another exhibit inside the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
People live today where they will. Neither terrain nor distance a deterrent to where the men of the city build their homes. All roads lead, as they have for centuries, to the great centers of commerce and communication, as the Continental Highway now leads us to the city of tomorrow. Plazas of urban living rise over freeways. Vehicles electronically paced travel routes remarkably safe, swift, and efficient. Towering terminals serve sections of the city, make public transportation more convenient. Its traditions and its faiths preserved, there is new beauty and new strength in the city of tomorrow. Technology can point the way to a future of limitless promise.
Visions of the future. This is a smart city, as imagined by tech companies and urban planners. Regular streetlights are replaced by smart poles, which connect to other Internet of Things devices and provide broadband. Thanks to driverless cars, accidents hardly ever happen. And drones and robots deliver goods, even coffee. In this future city, salad grows underground at the urban farm.
How do you see the cities of the future forming? Like, what will we see, like, rather relatively soon or in the quite far future? What do you think? That's a pretty open-ended question.
No, it's one that deserves careful consideration. Because there are so many futures to describe. And the future is such a vast possibility. So I'm going to choose to start extremely far in the future. Cities isn't even a thing. It's city. There's nothing left except complete urbanization. And even then, there's not enough room. And we're building up, way up. So there's space elevators to get to your apartment. To get a jumbo shrimp, you gotta take an elevator not just up, but sideways and across. And they realize that making flying cars or flying ships in a city was ludicrous, because making rolling cars was ludicrous to begin with. And when they started doing it, everyone just started crashing into each other and blowing up, no matter how good the AI got, because there wasn't enough room to make a turn. So they gave up on that shit, and it was elevators left, right, up, down, and underground, which became a big thing as well.
So is this future city that you see, does it have even, can you even walk on the ground anymore? Is there any ground left?
Mostly people don't walk anymore. They live in nutrition pods. Twice a day they get to hit the pleasure button, which does unspeakable things. And then they're, you know, fed nutrition. They go through like Mark Zuckerberg's meta world to get dinner. And, you know, come back for cocktails in the elevator. Because most of the life is existing in elevators at that point.
So you're saying that if you were making elevator music, then it's...
You'd be a pop star. What I've been thinking about in terms of the future of cities, this idea that there could be this kind of conveyor belt farm rolling between the ultra high rises, which will dominate the new single city landscape. The conveyor belt farm stops in your cubicle or your, you know, whatever little space you have to get out of your meta pod from looking at your friends and being part of some dirty virtual reality advertisement, to get up, you know, just to go to the toilet and eat some Soylent Green or macaroni, and then back into your pod. But when you're just, you know, having a guest or you're coming out of the pod for a moment, that there would be this almost collective conveyor belt farm. They would stop in your cubicle in the morning and you would do your planting. And then by the time the conveyor belt, and then come around noon, you do trimming. And you're always working on someone else's stuff. But then in the evening, the conveyor belt arrives with the fully grown vegetables, crops, and you harvest. So that there, because there's no more room for actual acreages of farmland, the farms are only like 2 feet long or 2 feet wide conveyor belts rolling between the residences. And there's kind of three levels of them. There's the planting, the maintenance, and the harvesting. And you have to do all three each day, but you're not necessarily harvesting the plants that you planted, because everyone's kind of doing it in a collective.
You're talking about a landscape in which there is no actual, well, there's ground, but it's so far, it's covered with buildings. All the ground is covered with buildings. And
yes.
So growing in the midair along these, in these massive residential complexes that you're imagining.
Because by that time, rooftop gardens aren't realistic, because the rooftops are literally in the stratosphere. That's how tall these buildings are. Like, if you get in the elevator, you're in there for an hour.
If we want to go somewhere, we have to go to the ground floor and then walk up the doors and then walk down the sidewalk, walk through a park.
There's no point going to the ground floor anymore.
There's no point. It is just everything is a floor. Every level is just another floor. There's no ground floor.
The whole planet becomes a giant hotel.
This is not far off from what was beginning to be conceived of right now, which is vertical farming, in which the idea is that through the use of hydroponics and automation and AI and robots, you'd have a farm in the city that's 25 stories high.
This is the first farm on Mars. Okay, technically it's not on Mars. It's Wyoming. So, close enough. Anyway, it could be on Mars. Because this is one of the world's most advanced indoor farms. And it could be the future of farming right here on Earth. With vertical farming, you can start with a building roughly the size of a Costco, grow your crops up and down instead of around you on the floor, ditch the pesticides, recycle the water, and you can grow pretty much anywhere, anytime.
Imagine what happens with the cows. They're all falling off it all the time. Where the chickens live in the vertical farm. I like the idea of the vertical farm.
Yeah.
I mean, you just got to get a really big ladder to get that zucchini. Oh, fuck, it's on the fourth story. I gotta climb up. I knew I should have planted the zucchini lower.
And with the demand for cannabis these days, that's going to be an enormous vertical farm.
Oh my God, that is wild.
And the idea is that it's in the urban setting, so what would happen if most farming ends up taking place in these vertical farms in the future cities? What happens to the countryside, the rural area? Does it become a paradise, or does everyone leave it and come to the city and just...
I believe it becomes a part of the city. The high rise, it's like even now in the 2020s, we built these green belts to try to keep the cities away from the farms, but within 5 years we'll have paved the green belts, and then it's like free, like it's just free for all. Like by the year 2060, the Muskokas are going to be a neighborhood of Toronto. By the year 2085, North Bay will be the last stop on the Yonge Line. By the year 3000, you'll be going to the Yukon for dinner, back to sleep in your place in Toronto on the 17,000th floor of the Trump Super Tower, and then going for a quick drink in São Paulo, Brazil, on the 50,000th floor of the Dubai Memorial Ultra Condo.
I'm Natish Bisono next to Toronto's eastern waterfront, where we may see the city turn the tide when it comes to urban planning. Right over there behind me is the future site of Sidewalk Toronto. It's part of the Quayside neighborhood, the first neighborhood of its kind to focus on technology and innovation.
You know, this is not Walt Disney World. This is actually a new, real piece of city that one's going to try and make in a real 21st century way.
It will be a community like none other. The proposals, modular housing and office buildings will study occupants' behavior while they're inside them to make life easier. According to the proposal, residents and workers will be universally connected by powerful broadband and served by futuristic conveniences.
It's touted as a bold experiment in city building, promising a new kind of neighborhood enabled by data, artificial intelligence and robots. Is this good news? Or too good to be true?
Labs is pulling out of its proposed high-tech neighborhood development on Toronto's waterfront. The Google affiliate was attempting to develop a sensor-laden smart neighborhood called Quayside, but met stiff resistance from privacy.
Didn't Google try to do a project here in Toronto? They want to create a section of the city to turn it into like a smart city.
Yeah.
That didn't go well, did it?
Not really, because it was a lot of data collection, right? And that's what the, you know, it was a huge privacy red flag. So, that's the perspective that I took on it. I know there's other things that were, like, really, did not seem viable. What was one of the proposals was like, you know, this one building was going to be made entirely of wood or something like that. Anyways, that there was a whole there was a big component about that project, the Smart Cities project, that involved data tracking. And sure, if you're like, because you're basically using that geographical space as a test site, right? That's what Google was doing. It was a Google Labs or whatever, some labs.
Yeah, so like here's the Guardian, and it says Toronto swaps Google backed not so smart city plans for people centered vision, and it gives us a little overview of what Google had originally intended. When a Google backed company first considered 12 acres of industrial land along Toronto's waterfront, it saw a blank slate that would let it design a high tech futuristic city. And further on a little bit more, it says algorithms would ease congestion on heated roads. Autonomous vehicles would shuttle residents past towering wooden skyscrapers. And by closely studying millions of residents, computers could learn how to make the city more livable. And there's what you're referring to. Skeptics saw a darker side, which included thousands of cameras monitoring streets, storefronts, parks, and harvesting data on the smallest movements.
It's just so ridiculous. Towering wooden towers? Like, this is Canada. This is the tundra. You just read it, and as a Canadian, you go, do they believe in what they're writing? I mean, the whole idea of the proposition for a smart city was to study it and see what, well, to study it. That, I guess it was under the pretense of an experimental city.
A prototype.
But, I mean, as we all know with experiments, nothing is... It's usually that there's something shady about it. So, I mean, whether or not it's to you know, how to perfect data harvesting while... You know, to ensure the safety and security of people, it's like it contradicts upon itself, right? It makes no sense.
But you think it would have been like this? You know, you're walking down the street of this smart city, and you have an ice cream cone in your hand, and now Google knows. Oh, Autumn likes ice cream cones, and particularly he likes strawberry ice cream.
It's surveillance, right? It's what it is. It's in the data collection. Really, is in many ways hand in hand with surveillance. So. That is the danger. It was already like a huge red flag for privacy activists and people who are like, well, Canada is very privacy sensitive, as far as I can tell. But right, we are typically we are very defensive of our rights, and rightly so. We have strong sense of civil liberties. I hope, and hopefully for the right. Well, the right. For the you know, more intelligent, rational, scientifically proven reasons. You know, we're not just like willful activists that say, hey, whatever, you're trampling upon my rights. Well, because you are, right? You're any risk of infringing on human rights in any way, shape, or form, we take against it. So yeah, we rally against it easily. So in my mind.
And speaking of tall buildings, that Google city would have had a giant wooden, not just a building, but a skyscraper. How many trees would that take? A million?
It's not going to work. It's like it's minus 40 outside and like there's a freaking blizzard. You think that wooden tower is going to last? No. To me, that stood out. It's like, wood? Like, really? What the hell? They use wood as, you know, oh, this will connect well with, you know, something. I don't know what.
Yeah, environmental consciousness, I guess.
Right, but you're not. You're fucking chopping down a piece of, like, old wood that everyone wants alive.
You are inside the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
The most exciting, the most important part of our Florida project In fact, the heart of everything we'll be doing in Disney World will be our experimental prototype city of tomorrow. We call it Epcot, spelled E-P-C-O-T, Experimental Prototype Community of Tomorrow.
Welcome to Epcot Center, the realization of Walt Disney's dream of an experimental prototype community of tomorrow. When Walt Disney designed Epcot Center, he wanted to create a demonstration and proving ground for new ideas and technologies in an atmosphere of world community and friendship. Capturing the spirit of scientific discovery and education is Future World. With 9 different pavilions, Future World is dedicated to new knowledge and innovation in an interactive environment of learning and fun.
Now, Walt Disney, he had a kind of really grand vision for what he called was the experimental prototype city of tomorrow, or sometimes interchangeable with experimental prototype community of tomorrow. Now, a lot of people are familiar with the Epcot Center in Walt Disney World. I've never been to Disney World or anything like that, but you have.
Yeah.
And you've traveled to what was the Epcot Center, but what a lot of people don't realize is that Walt Disney had a much, much bigger vision. He wanted to create a whole city.
Yeah, an early smart city, basically a prototype to try innovations, new materials. I didn't know all that. You know, first time I went to Disney World and Epcot Center, I was little. You know, my family took me. I don't know what age I was, maybe 7 or something. I was excited about the ears and the lollipops. And, I went a couple times in my childhood. And so Epcot, I didn't even know what the acronym stood for. Right. So I'm giving you, you know, and my memories are not extensive of Epcot. But what I'll say about it, if you're interested in my impressions as a child.
I am. But what I should first say is that his grand vision of an actual city that he wanted to build a smart city, it was unable to come to fruition because he died before the ambitious plans could begin to be carried out. And it was his obsession alone. Right. So once he had passed away, no one else in the company could really pick up where he left off. So they kind of settled on a compromise, which was the Epcot Center, which is where you went. And where you went and visited.
Yeah, and do you characterize it as obsession or vision? I mean, we'll leave it to other people to decide, and I'm sure there's controversy.
Well, there is some controversy about it.
So my impression of Epcot, you know, obviously, he didn't realize a community of the future. The vision, as you said, he died before being able to see that through. But until recently, obviously now there's a lot more discussion and visioning of future cities. But until these more recent visionings of future cities, Epcot, I thought, was to this day, some of the most futuristic ideas and practical sort of examples of things that had impact on me and still to this day do. And
you mean the Epcot Center experience?
And on the world at large, I think. Yeah, I mean, just I only remember a couple of things, really, from Epcot at this point. What I remember is actually more technology and visions of the future that they showed you. Not so much the layout of the place or
anything else. Is it a multimedia presentation kind of thing?
So, the visions of the future, it was kind of a ride beyond multimedia because they basically, you went through the dark and you saw constructions of future communities. You know, sort of 3D at a distance, you know, lit. And so one of them was underwater. One was in space. You know, those are the two that I remember. There were, I think, other iterations, but that's why I'm saying they were the most futuristic visions of future living that I had seen. And that I really remember and thinking that was just wild thinking, awesome imaginations and possibilities. And the other thing I really remember is hydroponics. They had huge hydroponic indoor gardens where things were growing in water inside the buildings.
Right. And at the time, that was not mainstream. hydroponics. It wasn't known by most people.
Yeah, it was.
We're talking about the 80s and the 90s.
This would have been
this,
earlier. Yeah, probably because I was quite young when I went. So yeah, but it'd be the 80s. So, so hydroponics, and it influenced me enough that when I was in doing science fairs, I don't know how universal science fairs are, but you know, it was a thing one had to do in elementary school, later elementary school. You would do science experiments and you would present on them. And if you were good enough, you got to, you know, sort of go to competitions. And the best science fair I ever did was hydroponics. And the idea really did come out of seeing hydroponics at Epcot and thinking that that was a really futuristic opportunity to be able to live and grow in difficult areas. And I think when we talk about, you know, futures of the city, imagine in cities having, you know, hydroponic gardens going up the sides of buildings and on the roofs and sensor technology, you know, informing robots when the minerals need refreshed or the water is low, and robots servicing all of that. And you have a beautiful city of growing things on your buildings, so...
Over the years, technology has revolutionized our world and daily lives. Modern technology has created amazing tools and resources, putting useful information at our fingertips. Some of the most exciting discoveries and inventions have paved the way for technological revolutions, which have made life better and easier. The world has moved from gas guzzlers to electric vehicles, even to self-driving cars. One of the products of advanced technologies, drones, which have been popularly used as entertainment and delivery machines, has now gone above that. The latest upgrade with drones is self-flying passenger drones, the world's first passenger drone which is capable of carrying a person into the air while it self-drives, has been unveiled in China.
When I think about this, the city of the future, I do see, but I don't know how it's going to work, but I do see a lot of autonomous vehicles. Like, but do you think we'll ever see autonomous passenger drones? I know we've talked about this before, but since we've last talked, there has been some developments, I think. Has there?
You know what? Autonomous passenger drones, transport drones that transport humans, it it could work if they could prove that, say, you know, a good use case would be like a ferry boat that, you know, that carries passengers over from one point to another. If they can prove that, you know, it's a safe enough.
Oh, you mean an autonomous boat?
Yeah, right? That's... But then why? Because then you're taking out the reasons why human piloted is to ensure that there's a failsafe, right? This is why...
So you're asking, what is the motivation for automation itself?
A decade ago, robots still seemed pretty limited. Now, not so much. And computers don't just win chess anymore, they can win Jeopardy.
Watson, what is the elegance of the hedgehog?
They can win Go.
There are about 200 possible moves for the average position in Go.
This is all happening really fast, and it's causing some to forecast a future where humans can't find work.
There will be fewer and fewer jobs that a robot cannot do better.
And what are the people going to do?
That's the $64,000 question.
I believe this is going to be one of the biggest challenges we face in the coming decades.
People who are not just unemployed, they are unemployable.
But if you ask economists, they tend to have a pretty different view from the futurists and Silicon Valley types.
Do you worry that new technologies could cause mass unemployment?
Yes.
No.
Well, I get it, but I think our imaginations are running too fast than what we're able to produce realistically. Right? It's like, I get it. Oh my God, I'm the first to be there. Oh yeah, automate everything and like, let's do sci-fi.
Tomorrow's living in spacious, well-planned communities will be closely integrated with the highway system. As father chooses the route in advance on a push-button selector, electronics take over complete control. Progress can be accurately checked on a synchronized scanning map. With no driving responsibility, the family relaxes together.
when we're thinking about cities in the future, it may not be in our lifetime, but you may be able to imagine 100 years from now in which there are entire networks of autonomous highways and byways where autonomous vehicles can do it safely and be controlled by the road itself. If you can imagine various sensors and...
True, I dig the idea for sure, but then we also have to think about how we can get to that point in a sustainable way. Because as you know, right, I mean, with the invention of all this amazing technology, including electric vehicles, everything electrically powered, we have to question where the resources are coming from. Like, you know, there's now like a glut for lithium, right, because of battery components, and like right now lithium is a key source, and other like minerals that are associated with technology. Like, so I don't know, it requires a coordinated effort to like actually somebody can have an amazing vision for something and everybody would love and lap it up, but then getting there is another story.
Let's imagine this a little bit into the future. You and your friends are having a great time. You stagger out from the bar, and you get into your autonomous, minibus with just one big window. The whole thing is a window on wheels, and you can drink on. You can continue your parties. You've got ice chilling for you, ready for you, and you know you might get into it that autonomous vehicle that night because you're just having a good time and you're feeling good, you know.
Yeah, but it sounds like a commercial, right? It's something that you would want to fantasize because it's proposed to you.
Autonomous party buses? Absolutely.
I mean, can you imagine? So, okay, we get there, and that's all that everybody's doing. They're in, like, what? They're all getting drunk in autonomous vehicles? Like, circling the city? Like, what the F?
The entire city is in an autonomous party bus.
But no, oh wait, because technology will save us. Everything's automated now, so everybody's in automated vehicles that, you know, that have a way to... how can that work if you, you know, if it's programmed and the vehicles are going off on their own, how could it not, like, contradict with other people's, oh, well, I want to be in this particular spot at a... And then, you know, how do you park? Like, I mean...
Well, I mean, that's good. The grids and the Internet of Things that might emerge in the future cities would somehow conceivably alter complex networks of decision making so that point A to point B, you didn't have X and Y happen ever because it was always being accounted for, controlled by artificial intelligence, roads that have control systems built into them.
I don't know. It's like providing a solution that we never really to a problem we never had.
Well, I mean, there can be a human error is there, and also humans can like they could actually be drinking and getting behind the wheel. Robots will never be drunk behind the wheel.
You are listening to The Kaleidoscope Gallery.
The Kaleidoscope Gallery.
The 20th century has been an age of transformation. It rode into our lives on a horse and buggy, and it will leave on wings, traveling twice the speed of sound. That astonishing rate of change will carry us careening through the next half century toward 2039.
You're about to step off into that year and find an electronic world. More than ever before, our lives will be shaped by the technology we've created. What you are about to see are the ideas of the futurists, the dreamers of this part of the century. The dreams are all grand.
You know how there's a few dreams one has in life you'll never forget?
Yes, I have certain dreams that are highly archetypal that I never forget.
Well, here's one that I had. It's simply this. You and I somehow were able to travel into the future. And we were being given a tour of the future city in a I guess you'd call it a kind of drone. And my estimation in this dream, maybe 100 or 250 years into the future. In general, what I saw was a city that was integrated with nature.
Yeah.
And that's essentially all it was. There was our food was being grown all around us, but integrated within the city.
Infrastructure.
Within the infrastructure and within the sidewalks and the parks. And also, people valued vegetation growing so just for beauty. There were so many things being grown just for beauty. Just kind of imagine, pull a little Walt Disney move here and dream of a future city or cities that would just be something that would be really
a utopian future city.
Oh, to be able to gaze into a crystal ball and know what tomorrow will be like. Where will we work? What will we do? What will the cities look like? Industries have been built around answering such questions. Future forecasting is serious business these days. But for some people, future forecasting is also a lot of imaginative fun.
So far, our vision of a future city, which, by the way, I realized that if someone listened to this, because earlier we were listening to clips of yesterday's idea of a city of tomorrow. In other words,
retrofuturism.
Retrofuturistic ideas.
Yeah, that's always fascinating.
60 years ago, did people, 100 years ago, what did people think the future of cities would look like? And we are here doing the very same thing. And perhaps in 50 years from now, people will be able to hear what we've said. And
it's interesting to compare those things. Another thing I think that would happen in a utopian future of the city is you would have way more of the power generation happening inside of the city itself, too. So you would have solar arrays in available places. You would have, where you have geothermal power available because you live around volcanoes and that sort of thing, you've tapped into that. If you have deep water cooling because we're on the Great Lakes and you can use that, you're doing all of that. We develop new technologies like paint that can absorb, solar power, wave power. We generate so much garbage in cities and we ship it to Malaysia.
Ocean wave power.
Yes, but you can get some tidal and ocean wave power. So where you're Halifax or the Bay of Fundy, you can generate quite a bit.
To summarize, then, varied, multiple, different sources of energy generation that aren't your typical, and are hyper local as well.
Yeah.
And are highly integrated
with the infrastructure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people who will speak about a dystopian future city, in which it's been overrun or darkly controlled by artificial intelligence, robots, automation, humans maybe superfluous, humans living in tiny pods and no one ever leaves their house. I mean, these are the dystopian things we hear about. Now, what are some of the utopian ways we can think about artificial intelligence, robots, and automation and the like?
To have a utopian future with any of these tools, because all of these tools are completely neutral. I mean, AI is nothing more than sort of, algorithms. It really comes down to our intention as human beings. And so if we can get to a place in society where we can agree that our own good and the good of each other is what's paramount, and that's what we all align to, then all of the technologies and innovations and permutations of those that we develop will lead us to more positive outcomes. And even when we make mistakes, we'll course correct and adjust so that we're doing that.
Let's assume that we've done that.
So if we've done that, then I think we start getting into awesome, versions of the future where, we're living in these idyllic, you know, very humanistic places. So while, yes, we have a lot of people living vertically in smaller spaces, I also think, though, that, you know, we don't end up with these big, big sprawling metropolises, and our more rural areas have more vitality to them. They're more like mini cities. So
imagine you're sitting in your vertical space that is maybe in the 800th floor.
Okay? You have enough space. You have beautiful views, and it's all functional.
Okay, and there's greenery everywhere. Your
yes.
food is...
You get fresh food from your own building.
And, though, you have, like, a perfect AI assistant. A robot that could do anything you need. And also, human beings won't have to work at anything if they don't want to, because... automated systems will take care of everything.
We don't have to do the box lifting and the food delivery and it you know,
or the manufacturing.
We're able to live more self-actualized. You know, what is the, you know, but ultimately we live in a Star Trek future where money is no longer a thing and people live their purpose in life. You know, you get to fulfill, and we get to reflect more. We get to learn new things. We get to explore. We get to, you know, be who we are in the best possible way with less barriers and fight, you know, because you're not worried about money, basically. And can you afford that education? Can you afford whatever it is, that knowledge you need to do to fulfill yourself, your dreams, your and so if in a utopian future city, This is how we're able to live. We're able to live our best possible selves in urban centers that are beautiful and healthy, and are the places where we live are human based. Are you know, as and we are living in relationship with our natural surroundings. There'll be challenges. So,
and think of all of the autonomous party buses.
Oh yeah,
that you could like. There'd be kind of a nonstop
party flights, party buses. I mean,
all automated, all
the party submarine, as long as it's big enough, you know, it could be a combo of that Epcot underwater living, but it's a whole center. It's not a submarine. Like, who wants to be cramped into a submarine? You know, just like, okay, let's go into this, you know, party underwater city. Yeah.
So basically the city of the future is in a giant party center, a knowledge center.
It is a knowledge center. It is it's like that the School of Athens meets Star Trek.
I wonder if there's going to be any cities underwater.
Well, I think there already are. We're just not invited. I think the whole phenomenon of the undersea metropolises is little discussed, but a major issue, like Atlantis. They say it disappeared. But really, it just started this trend of bubble living beneath the burbling blue seas. There's a lot of pressure down there, but there's a lot of pressure in the cities on the ground, too. You know, we gotta fight traffic, get to a gym. There's 17,000 floors in my building, and I can't find the party room.
Before we part, let me leave you with a quote from Arthur C. Clarke, who was an English science fiction writer, inventor, deep-sea explorer, and a futurist, who said, "Trying to predict the future is a hazardous occupation. Because if the predictions sound at all reasonable, you can be sure that in 50 years, the progress of technology will make those predictions seem ridiculously conservative. But if, however, someone could accurately describe the future as it was to take place, those predictions would sound so absurd, so far-fetched, everyone would laugh them to scorn. I hope you have enjoyed this excursion through the Kaleidoscope Gallery. Until next time.
You have been listening to the many colors of the Kaleidoscope Gallery.